Who's your full name?
Dave Kidd.
Kidd?
Just like Captain Kidd. Mm-hmm. You wrote me a letter one time. I did a show in honor of your birthday.
Oh, yeah. I remember. I heard about it.
I did a whole show last week.
Some of the kids in the Duke Ellington Jazz Society told me about it.
I did a show last week, a whole hour and a half, based on that Brad McEwen article in Downbeat. I was playing all the records under their wrong title and telling them the right title afterwards, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, Brassiere became Rumpus in Richmond. This won't go on the air. I wonder if I got enough gain there. Yeah, I'm fine. This is just about as notable an evening for the Dave Kidd Show as I've ever had in my years of broadcasting. For with us tonight, backstage at Music Barn, is the overriding figure in the field of jazz, in my opinion, the great Duke Ellington. I'm mighty pleased, Duke, after your illness, to see you looking so hale and hearty again.
Well, thanks very much, Dave. Good to be back here again.
Well, believe me, we love to have you back. You can come as many times as you please.
Thanks. It's always wonderful.
Would you answer some technical questions for me this evening?
Technical? Oh, I don't know. You ask them, and I'll... If I don't answer them, well, I'll just try to wiggle radiogenically.
Wonderful. That's the word we'll have to look up. Number one, I know, and I've told our listeners here many times, of the fact that you've had a band for approximately 40 years, mainly on the road.
Oh, well, now, that's not the extravagant now. Let me see, 40 years. Ooh, when was that?
1922?
No, I would say the nucleus of this band was in 1927 when we went in the Cotton Club.
Yes, but... I have records in 26, for example, with Jabbo Smith and so forth.
Oh, yes. Well, I was just a child, and that didn't count.
The Harlem Feet Warmers and so forth, period.
Mm.
And I know, for example, that you started out as a stride pianist.
Yeah. How about that?
Isn't that true?
You mean you remember when I had a left hand, is that it?
Well, some of these things I don't remember as well as having read about them. I read the notes you wrote for the back of the last James P. Johnson album, for example, when you said you learned Carolina Shout by following the keys down on a player piano.
Yeah, that's right.
And from that point, in the next 8 or 10 years, you developed into what I consider the finest composer America has produced. I'm differentiating between a composer and a songwriter, now putting a composer in a higher category, because a composer does all the technical things like arrange and so forth that a songwriter doesn't necessarily do. Where in the world now a modern musician listens to you and all the greats that have gone before and he patterns something new based upon what you have done? But nobody went before you with the technique that you had. Now, how did you learn that?
Oh, I don't know, listening. Listening, and you don't necessarily have... When you listen, you don't necessarily have to listen to things that are being played somewhere that you can look at. I mean, sometimes there are things being played in your mind, too, you know, and you have to hear them.
I understand.
It's just like a guy's blowing a chorus... You know, and an ad lib course, and he's going to play, well, like, you know, like maybe he's going to play 27 choruses. Well, before he plays a chorus, he has to hear it.
That's right.
You know, he can't play it if he didn't hear it first. If it's going to amount to anything or have any kind of taste at all.
Well, this has been the mystery to me right along is you heard these, but you had no place outside your head to hear them because at that time people weren't playing that way. This was the era of Chicago style and New Orleans style, and Fletcher was coming along with a swing style band, but nobody played like you. Nobody's played like you yet, Duke.
Well, you know, I don't know. Well, there are a lot of people. You see, there's a very important school of music that nobody ever gets to hear about, and that is the East Coast piano players way back in the... during the First World War days, you know, that you never hear anything about them. I mean, up and down the East Coast from Boston to Washington and even Richmond.
Incidentally, of these pianists who, of this particular group, I am not sure I'm familiar, but I am familiar with all the stride pianists of the 20s, like Willie the Lion and Lucky Roberts and so forth. Of all these, who was your favorite?
Well, I never had favorites. I just remember this one or that one who had the highest percentage of great performances, you know, you could say. But, I mean, I don't think you can... It's very easy to compare these people who play so well. I mean, there were guys in... Well, a lot of guys were in New York. Like the Lion, as you say, James P., and, of course, Fats, who came along later. And in Baltimore, the guy named Joe Rochester. In Washington, it was Louis Thomas, Louis Brown, Doc Perry. A lot of them in Washington. Lester Dishman, Clarence Bowser, Sticky Mac. And these guys, you know, they had a left hand like... And there was a guy who was a real left-hand piano player, Seminole. That's all I remember. And there's Donald Lambert over in Jersey, you know, and...
I discovered him on a record just before he died. Fabulous.
Yeah, all these great people. And, you know, my great rebellion and horrible complaint is when I go to hear a piano player, a great pianist, you know, in that field, and... His agent has told him that the thing that is popular is to have a trio or a quartet, and he has a bass and a drum and a guitar. Mm-hmm. And so all the time when you should be listening to the great piano player, you're listening to this other stuff, you know?
That's right.
And I used to have big fights with Tatum about it, you know? And by the way, I made him break up his trio, you know? And I'm always doing that. I mean, and I make myself a pretty bad fella, you know, because, I want to hear the piano. You know, because I know what happens to a guy the minute he gets a bass and all that, you know, and a guitar, his left hand gets nothing, you know. Mm-hmm. And so in a couple of years, I mean, a guy becomes a one-handed piano player.
I'm not trying to swell your ego, Duke, but I don't feel that you have an enemy in the business. As a matter of fact, I've told our listeners, and this is true, among the most modern people around, you can almost measure how good a musician they are by what they think of Duke Ellington, and the good ones think Ellington is it, no matter what they play themselves.
Well, I got a lot of friends around, you know.
You really have in the music business. I know this tape will be broadcast on WGY, and it reaches far and wide, and many people are going to be...
Yeah, I know. We listen to it as we're riding around, you know, a lot.
Of the records made by the 1926 to 30 Cotton Club Band, which do you prefer, really?
I don't have any preference of anything. I mean, I like a good performance, and I enjoy that when I'm listening to it, and it's like a thing with me, I guess, you know? Like, you say, what singer do you like, you know? All these questions have been asked me, and I have a stock answer, you know, and that is that... there's no singer in the world, well, you don't have to combine it to singers, you can make a musician, horn blower, drummer, pianist, anything. You say, well, there is, we'll put it broadly, we'll say, there's no performance in the world that can compare with the performance that you're enjoying at the moment.
That's very well put. As a matter of fact, I could almost say, as you've so aptly put it, the best Ellington record is the last one you heard.
Well, thanks.
You had a strong interest, and still do, in concert music, don't you?
Yeah, well, our stuff is all mixed up anyway. You know, we go from one dance to a concert, and we do things with the symphony, and sometimes one or two times, of course, I'm just a yearling, so to speak, as a piano recitalist. But I've had occasion. I did one in Washington at that International Jazz Festival, and I did one at the Modern Museum of Art last winter with just the piano for the first half and then bringing the drums and bass for the last half. When I bring in the drums and bass for me, I feel as though I have a license to do that because I'm not a great pianist, usually. I mean, but what I speak of goes for the greater people, you know?
I think you deprecate yourself too much. I know that your instrument is this band.
Oh, yeah.
But
I gave up piano a long time ago.
I watch you play piano, and believe me, you play piano.
Well, it isn't really pianistical piano. It's personalized piano.
Well, as you play it with the big group, you play it with as punctuation marks, more or less.
Oh, yeah.
But
yeah.
Nevertheless,
Humpty Dumps.
I sat up here on the stage behind you last year and watched the piano very closely, and you play piano. Who are your favorite composers in the concert field?
I like something that just everybody's done, actually. I don't like everything that anybody's done, but I like some of the things that everybody's done, you know.
But you've listened a lot to people like Debussy and Delius.
Delius, Ravel.
I'll bet you like Gustav Holst, too. Gustav Holst, The Planets and so forth?
Yeah, oh yeah. Well, you know, there's so many great musical minds around. I mean, it's very, very difficult and practically impossible to say who is greater than the other. It's just about impossible.
Talk to me a little bit about
the guess, huh?
Talk to me a little bit about the 1940 band, as I call it, the band which lasted from 1939 to 1946, roughly, with all the people like Cootie and Rex and Lawrence and the whole bunch.
Yeah, well, a lot of changes took place in that time. 39?
Mm-hmm.
Well, a lot of very important changes took place in that period. In 1939, Billy Strayhorn came with us. In 1940, Cootie went out and Ray Nance came in. In 1940, Ben Webster came in. 1940, Jimmy Blanton came in and completely revolutionized the whole style of bass playing from then on.
Absolutely.
And in 1940, Billy Strayhorn, I would say, created the renaissance of vocal arranging or orchestra support, you know, background, because it had never been so elaborate before. He did Flamingo, Herb Jeffries.
Mm-hmm.
And then what happened then in 1940? In 42, Barney Bigard left. We got Jimmy Hamilton. In 43 and 44, Cat Anderson came in. 45, Russell Prokop. And it's been practically the same nucleus ever since.
Harry and Harry Carney, that is, on baritone, and Johnny Hodges on alto are been with us since 27, haven't they?
Well, Harry Carney has been since 27, Johnny Hodges, 1928.
And, of course, Hodges was out for a few years.
Yeah, he was out for a year or two, and let's see, Teasel came in 1929. Cootie came in 29, too. And Teasel went away in 1944, and he's been back with us off and on. But since he moved to California, he likes to stay out there, and he doesn't like to stay on the road. You know, his wife calls up, and he gets the blues and starts to cry, and he wants to go home. You know? There's nothing bad.
As I told you before we started the tape, my theme music, I think, tells where my heart lies. I have used four pieces over the years, and I wouldn't even entertain the thought of not using an Ellington piece played by Ellington as theme music for my show. There's many reasons. I believe it's the highest quality jazz there is, and much of it is jazz, but doesn't fit the too loud and too fast category that so many of the general public feel is jazz. I've used Dusk from the 1940 period. And as I told you, I wish you'd re-record that sometime.
That's a good suggestion. I think I will.
It's a beautiful tune. And I've used In a Mellotone. Incidentally, In a Mellotone, I get a kick out of it. For a long time recently, the Mellotone was spelled as two words on all record labels, M-E-L-L-O-W-T-O-N-E. And, of course, it's one word, Mellotone is. And then I've used Don't Ever Say Goodbye. And now I'm using as a closing theme Harry Carney's solo on Serious Serenade, which you made for Capitol.
Oh, yeah. Serious Serenade. How'd that go? I've forgotten that completely.
I'm trying hard to find a way to describe it. It is all Harry Carney's solo.
It is?
Yes. Very, very nice, medium, slow tempo.
I forgot that. I better go look that up.
It's on the Ellington Showcase album.
Yeah.
How are you feeling?
Oh, pretty good. Well, I need a little sleep, that's all.
Yes, I know you had a major operation in the spring, and it's pretty tough to take a band on the road on one-nighters after that.
Well, it's not really tough. I mean, of course, you know, the hours are long if you have jumps, long jumps. But the thing that's been happening through the years is that in spite of the physical hardship and the wear and tear, you get the musical payoff at the end of the night, and so you're completely refreshed as a result. Mm. You know?
That leads me into a question. You reminded me of something I was surely going to ask you, and that is this. We spoke about your genius in the beginning, and I used the word genius, and please don't contradict me, in the 20s, of all of a sudden starting with nobody to copy and developing this big band style, which is completely unique. And I wish you could explain to me how this fountain of music keeps coming all the time. Some of the things you
Well,
write...
it's fairly simple, Dave, because in writing, you write what you feel is fitting for the people who are going to do the playing. And, I mean, just the mere fact that a different person is playing it, or what constitutes a completely different musical character, musical or different tonal character, gives it, makes it have to be written and handled, sort of tailor-made for this person.
You're the only orchestrator I've ever seen that doesn't force the soloist into your mold rather than the
reverse.
Well,
no, that wouldn't give me any exercise for my mind. I wouldn't, you know, I mean, if I don't know who I'm writing for, it would be very, I'm sure it would be very dull writing. It'd be very drab, bland, nothing. Put notes on the paper and don't know who's going to play them. You haven't the slightest idea what they're going to say. You can't hear it.
No,
you know.
But on top of that, the man...
I mean, it's all right for a guy who's writing for a symphony because there's such a thing as standard tones for every instrument at every level.
That's right.
But when you have guys who come from various extractions as far as their musical education is concerned, I mean, you get all kinds of different personalities and tones. And first of all, I mean, if you have a section... you've got your first problem in evaluating these things as to how you're going to distribute them. Mm-hmm.
But this works so well. You have taken people, innumerable people that have been great stars with you, and made them produce like they never produced before they came with you, and among those that have left have never produced that way again because your writing so fits what they're able to do best.
Oh, yeah. We used to have to write things like when Tricky was with us, before he died, with the style he was doing with the plunger and the mute inside the plunger left him with about 7 real great dramatic notes, tones rather. Mm-hmm. And it was a sort of a mathematical exercise. I mean,
how to get
writing
those notes.
So as to employ these 7 notes with whatever mixture you wanted and which were the most effective and you know. And this is a wonderful problem. I mean, without a problem, then what do you do? I mean, the person hasn't got any problem, hasn't got anything.
I see your point. You know, like, I mean, to think, too.
You just lay there and stagnate.
That's right. You know. The latest records out by your fine band are the All-American and Jazz album and the album with the Count Basie band and
Count
your own
Basie.
Together,
yeah.
Which to me comes out like an augmented Duke Ellington band, I must admit. But what have you done that isn't out yet?
That isn't?
Yes.
That isn't out yet?
That's right.
Oh, Columbia's got about 4 albums in the can. I got one thing in there I call The Girls. Some of them are old standards like Sylvia and Peggy, but they're all dedicated to people. And some of them are originals like Mahalia, Dinah, and Lena. What was the other? There's another one. Let's see, Lena, Mahalia, Dinah. I thought there was another one, original in there. There was another original. I can't think who it was.
No Ivy?
But we've done, we did, you know, 4 things, a suite of numbers for Ella.
Mm-hmm.
And also we've done the Portrait of Florence Mills, which was Black Beauty. because that's a long time ago.
Yeah.
What else have we? Oh, you asked about the albums. Well, there's a French album in there. Our conception of a lot of standard and current French numbers. And then there's a small group in there with Johnny Hodges, Lawrence Brown, Harry Connie, Paul, Ray Nance, the rhythm section. And then there's a piano album with just a piano and a bass and drum. They're all fairly good.
Wonderful. I'm looking forward to them. There's no event to me quite like a new Ellington record. You were at Basin Street East the last couple of weeks, weren't you?
Yeah.
Now, this is Sunday, and you were at Music Barn.
Yeah.
Where do you go from here?
Well, Lake Placid tomorrow night, and then we go back to New York.
And more on the road after that?
Oh, yeah. We're around. We'll be recording for a week. That Randall's Island thing, they went out of business. They lost so much money. We were supposed to have been there the next weekend, but they went out of business, so we'll be recording. And I got plenty to do anyway, because while I'm still in New York, I have to finish and polish what I'm doing on a show. I'm doing a show, you know, that's the musical version of Blue Angel.
Oh, wonderful.
It's called Sugar City.
Mm-hmm.
And it's coming along very well.
Boy, you have a way with a title, believe me.
Well, that is my title.
Yeah. Well, Duke, I want to express how I feel. I think you've been especially gracious tonight. I know you're tired. It's very late. You've played a marvelous concert. And I know you're not over a serious illness very long. And I want to thank you very, very much for taking this time before our WGY microphone this evening. We have a whole station full of Ellington fans over in Schenectady,
well,
and I'm sure they'll consider this tape rather an event.
Yeah. One of my favorite restaurants, incidentally, is in Schenectady. What is it? You know it. What's the name of it? German restaurant.
A German restaurant.
Yeah. What's the name?
Down the corner of State Street and Erie Boulevard.
Nicolaus
restaurant.
Nicolaus, yeah. Great, I'll never forget it. I haven't been there in a long time.
Yeah.
Still there, I hope.
Oh, it's still there, still serving all the old-fashioned beers and everything
else.
Yeah,
one day I'll be back to get a... It reminds me of Munich.
Yes, sawdust on the floor, the whole works.
Yeah, just like that beer hall in Munich.
But I'm not exaggerating. We have a station full of Ellington fans in there.
Well, good. Well, I'll tell you what, Dave. You tell all of your lovely listeners that we do love them madly.
I will, Duke. Thanks very much.
Oh.